Welcome to the Rusted Garden Homestead Podcast. My name is Gary Pilarczyk and I am the content creator for the Rusted Garden. This podcast is all about vegetable gardening, growing, tending, harvesting, cooking, and sharing it all with family and friends. I'll have guest co-hosts, I'll do listener Q&A, and generally ramble on about growing food in any size, space, and place. Start small, learn, and expand when you are able. My guest today is Erica Jones. We're going to be talking about prepping your gardens, really late winter now, early spring, but basically getting the garden started. Before we get going, can you tell people a little bit about you? It's been a while since we did a podcast, so maybe kind of just give them the quick points on who you are as my guest.
Sure. Thanks, GP. Hey, y'all. Hey, I am Erica Jones, a colleague of Gary Pilarczyk. We serve as a team at the Community Ecology Institute, and we like to teach farming and gardening and all things food together. So I am pairing up with GP today to talk to you guys about getting ready for spring. It is in the air. I can smell it, and I can't wait. I'm ready.
I was going to say, yeah, it's in the air, and I do have to say every year I get fooled. The last 20 years, we'll get some nice warm patch in the beginning of March, and I will put all my stuff out, and then, of course, the frost comes and rolls in. But spring fever is certainly here, and today, maybe we can kind of, you know, get some of that fever, go outside, prepare the garden, weed, just do little things, but start getting back into the flow of being out in the garden. Because I know it wasn't a super cold winter here, but it was cold enough that it was just kind of miserable. And without the garden, you know, after, you know, I like a little break in December, but come January, I'm getting, I wouldn't say depressed, maybe the winter blues, and the garden's what really rescues me. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah, it's time.
I'm going to be doing this podcast hopefully every second and fourth Wednesday of the month. We're just getting started again, and let's just kind of dive into it. So before we actually get to diving into it, I'd like to go over some of the things people can plant. And for those of you listening outside of Maryland, I am in Maryland Zone 7, but there's a lot of cool weather crops that you can either seed directly or start as transplants. And from seeds, these are plants that I don't really recommend starting as indoor transplants, but soon as that soil is not frozen, your cool weather crops can go in there. And feel free to join in if I miss any of them, but I think I have a pretty comprehensive list. We have, from seed, I don't recommend starting these indoors again, but direct seed radishes, arugula, Chinese cabbages, which are like bok choy, and carrots. Now, they may sit a little bit in your garden, but they can handle the frost, they can handle the cold weather, and they're just wonderful to get started. In fact, this year, because the weather's been weird, my radishes, my arugula, my spinach, and my carrots from last year are already up and growing. They kind of overwintered and did pretty good. What other plants do you recommend kind of getting started as seeds or even as transplants?
So right now I'm in leek and onion fever. We are at about the middle, almost the end of February, and this is about the time that I start my seeds. I love onions. We use a lot of them in our cooking. Mm-hmm. But you need a lot of space to be able to accumulate enough onions, I think, to be worth growing. So I instead like to do leeks because they're much milder. They're very versatile. They hang in the garden much longer. And bunching onions, which are AKA scallions or green onions, depending on what you call them. Those seeds, you throw them anywhere, they will pop up. They don't even need to be spaced, if you will. Right. Just throw them and they will give you oniony flavor for all of your days.
Also known as spring onions. And that's good because I actually don't have leeks and onions on my list. But this morning I just did a complete video, which will be launched. The podcast won't go out for a week, so the video will be there. But it's on how to start onions indoors. You grow them for 8 weeks, you trim them up, you get them ready, and then you have your own onion transplants that go right out into the garden. And they're really, really easy to start indoors.
Yeah, so they're pretty magical.
Yeah, they are. And I do love the leeks, and I do have a lot of space, like you're saying. But if you can get the onions out there and the leeks out there, they really do add to the flavor. If you're just doing, you know, simple salads and chopping it up for flavor, putting it in stir fries, making soups out of it, they're just a wonderful addition, along with the garlic.
Yes, and I know, like, we generally talk about food here, but flowers also, this would be the time to start sowing seeds for any flowers that need a long period of growth, like your lavender, that definitely, although lavender is considered an herb, mm-hmm. you need to start that early so that you've got enough time for them to come up to a mature enough level to transplant them out when it's warm enough.
So. Yeah, and these are, I mean, and these are plants that you can seed or start indoors February or March. It depends, you know, where your zone is. Other crops that I'm actually putting out as seed into my garden, it's later February, is going to be endive, turnips, peas, carrots, lettuce, spinach, kale, kohlrabi, mustard greens, Chinese cabbage, the same things that, how do I want to say it? It really depends on your zone. Some of these you're going to want to start indoors because you have a short growing season. Some of these you can just go ahead, put the seeds out, and you can also start them as transplants. I don't want to get people too confused, but you have a lot of options. And one of the things people worry about is they think they have to start everything indoors with respect to the cool weather crops, and you don't have to. Mm-hmm. You can go and seed them directly in a garden. You can lay a sheet of plastic over them that will help warm up the soil. So there's a lot you can do direct in a garden where you don't have to really start stuff indoors.
And a lot of the crops that you've mentioned, they can handle being in that cooler soil. They prefer it. And it really does boil down to, all right, if you're saying you want to grow some peas, get online, go to GP's channel and learn how to grow peas. Understand right. What peas want, and then create that condition. If your conditions outside are already 50 degrees and your soil is workable, put your peas in. They can take it. They're ready. And generally, so it's really knowing them.
Yeah, and generally speaking, if the nights are staying in the 40s and you get that dip to the frost, the seeds can go out. And then if your days are certainly getting into the 50s, that's warm enough to get these growing. There might be, like if you started peas indoors, they're going to germinate in like 5 days. If you start peas outside, they may take 2 to 3 weeks just because the soil's colder. But I always found that when you direct seed, I think the root systems just establish really well, and I find those plants sometimes are better and stronger than even the transplants, even if I do a good job with them.
Yeah, I agree. It's the plant knows, or the seed, we'll say, knows what to do, as long as the conditions are right. So if we get out of the way,
let nature do its thing.
Yeah.
And then for transplants, because seasons are short, I always grow broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, sometimes cabbages, as seed starts indoors, just because they can take a long time to mature. And it's not the frost. Like, I'm not worried about the cold, but here in Maryland, the heat rolls in too quickly. So my broccoli and cauliflower won't form a nice head for harvesting if I do seeds, because it takes longer, again, like we're saying, for them to germinate. And the plants do well, but then all of a sudden that warm weather rolls in, your cool weather crops are going to want to bolt and flower and things change up. So we have a kind of a tight cool period to get a lot of these plants growing. So direct seed, get them started.
Yeah, I think the broccoli, the cauliflower, the cabbage, unless I've got a transplant that is of an early maturing variety, I'm just waiting till the fall, because it is Maryland here. It just, you never know with the spring how fast that warm weather is going to hit, and you can feel very defeated after starting your baby from seed, and you get it out there, and then it bolts because it got warm.
Right. The warm really makes a difference, and what happens is the sun's just beating down on that top 2-4 inches of the soil. The soil goes from being 40, 50 degrees, maybe 60 degrees, to getting to being like 70, 80 degrees. And as soon as those cool crops get warm feet, basically, they want to flower and bolt and things change up. So for basic garden prep, I don't, you know, it's not rocket science. So first thing is kind of, you know, do a check. Did you put down compost or manures or mulch or anything really in the fall? And if you did, to be honest, your garden probably has enough nutrients in there. You don't have to over worry it. Sometimes we get into this groove where we think we have to keep feeding, fertilize, and just jack the soil up with everything. Yeah. You don't have to if you're pretty consistent. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree. I was out there this morning, and I mean, I will admit, I was a bit lazy during fall cleanup time, so I have a lot more to do now as the temperatures warm up, and I was like, and I always say, gosh, why didn't you do this in the fall? Mm-hmm. But, you know, right now I was looking at my blueberry bushes, you know, your woodies. Are there crops that need to be pruned soon? Looking at, all right, what am I going to prune next month when it's safe enough to prune? I fed them some fertilizer. I put down some fresh compost and some leaves, and it's just sort of cleaning up and making sure that your soil is not exposed. Over the fall, you know, sometimes if the leaves aren't broken down enough, they'll blow away as the weather roll in and can kind of blow off your leaves. And I use leaves as mulch. So I just, you know, re-amend with some more leaves, just kind of keep things covered, waiting to start transplanting and seeding.
Are your blueberries in the ground or are they in containers?
They are in the ground. They okay. started in containers when I was living in a town home and only had my deck to grow. You should have seen it. It was a jungle out there. But I had them in big, I think they were like 10-gallon containers. And when I moved to my next home, I had more land space. And so they are in the ground and definitely doing better because they have so much more room for their roots to expand. So I'm pretty satisfied with how they're coming along.
And we'll talk about prepping your earth beds for the first half of today's cast, and then we'll talk about containers for the second part. And I was saying earlier, like, I'm always tempted sometimes to get plants out too early. What we talked about with seeding and transplanting were all the cool weather crops. For people that aren't familiar with them, again, as we were saying, they can take a frost, they like the cold. But you want to be very careful you're not rushing out any of your warm weather crops right now because they are frost sensitive. So slow and steady. Some of the things that I like to do just for prepping, and I have to say, because I don't do it every year, I was able to clean up my garden pretty well last November, December. So going out there now, it's some weeding and some minor, you know, repairs of trellises and stuff like that, moving debris. But, you know, don't beat yourself up for one. You know, you kind of were going down that road a little bit of saying, why didn't you do more? You're a busy person. But also, if you do something good, give yourself a little bit credit. It goes both ways. Basically, right now, clear out old plants, weed, repair trellises, move things around, you know, kind of get the garden into the shape that you want. Maybe turn your compost pile if you have it. Just general cleanup is really important. I'd like to get the growing areas like ready now so that come the right temperatures, I'm able to plant. So I can kind of just go out after things are cleaned up, maybe for, you know, the end of February, beginning of March, and I just kind of walk around and do little things. And then soon as the temperatures are getting, you know, best for those cool weather crops, I'm ready to go. I got my transplants going in. I've got seeds going in. And it's a good time. I mean, it is just around the corner.
Just around the corner. And it comes fast. We think, oh gosh, I'm going to miss my garden during the wintertime. And here we are. It's time. And it's nice to just go out and really just spend some time in your garden evaluating, you know, what worked or didn't work for me last season that I want to try differently. This is the time to really take those notes and make a plan so that you're not overwhelmed when the warm, you know, weather hits and it's like, oh my gosh, I got to do all these things. Take your time and build into it as the season grows.
Yeah, I think that is good advice. And same thing, my garden is pretty large, but you can always feel overwhelmed by looking at the big picture. You know, just look at your garden like snapshots. And then just kind of work on one snapshot that day or that weekend or that week. And then you go to another snapshot. And before you know it, spring is fully here. Your beds are in shape and you're ready to go. Basic prep for earth beds. And earth beds I count as anything that's attached to the earth. Or easier way to say it, not containers. Might be metal raised beds, might be wooden framed beds. But anything where the plant, like your blueberry plants, can grow down into the earth, get deeper into the earth, get that extra nutrient, extra water. I call those earth beds. So if you didn't, let's just say you didn't do any prep last year, you're walking out into your garden now, some of the things you can do, and I know you would agree, but I think you would also agree with both parts. It's always about compost. It always builds the soil. It's the best stuff. But not everybody has room for it, and they can't get a lot of it. So we're going to talk about a couple ways to get the beds in shape. But if you can, if it's just putting down leaves like you are doing or putting down grass clippings, you want to keep a consistent supply of mulches and compost going to your bed so that over the years, you just create beautiful soil.
We call that organic matter.
Yep.
And that again could be basically anything that had life at some point. But it will be your leaves, your broken down twigs, your grass clippings, some of the earth. You can kind of turn that up a little bit to fluff it in with the leaves. Mm-hmm. And
it builds it slowly. And that's what I want to stress to people. A lot of times, especially new gardeners come in and they think they have to spend a fortune on like bagged composts, bag manures, which, by the way, that's for another podcast, but they're not really quality stuff in those bags. You have to know what you're buying. But you don't have to spend a fortune. Plants want to grow. As we were saying, you just got to give them basically good conditions. Nature takes over. They grow. They give back to you. But anytime that you can throw something on top of your soil, like half an inch or an inch of grass clippings, just keep doing that through the year. And that will pay dividends going forward. So let's say you do have compost. You know, right now is a great time to put down 1 or 2 inches across your entire bed, your whole growing space. And compost, you can kind of just leave there, let the rain wash it in. If you want, take your hand and just scrape it into the top inch or so or something like that. If you don't have compost, any organic granular fertilizer, that's the dry fertilizers, they all are pretty much the same. You just want to make sure that nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, the main nutrients your plants want, are represented. Because you can buy something like bone meal that may not have any nitrogen. So you're looking for an organic granular where the numbers of N, P, and K are like, I don't know, 4, 4, 4, up or down a couple of numbers. That means you might see a 5, 3, 3 or a 6, 4, 3. Don't over-worry about that. What I always recommend to people is when you're buying the organic granular, read the ingredients because they're all basically the same, like fish meal, poultry meal, bone meal, blood meal. When you really compare the ingredients, again, it's pretty much the same. The problem is like one bag of fertilizer that's 5 pounds, a 5 pound bag of fertilizer, might be $17. Another bag of fertilizer that's $5 may be $12. So what I recommend is check out the ingredients. I don't really recommend paying more than $2 per pound of the organic granular. Don't get fooled by the fancy packaging and labeling and stuff like that. If you can, try and buy the 20-pound bags, for example, of Espoma, where maybe a 20-pound bag is like $22. So you're almost paying $1 a pound. It goes a long way. Anyway, you got your organic granular. You're not paying a ridiculous price for it. You can just lightly scatter that across your soil, rake it in a little bit, and you're getting your beds prepped. If you're going to be putting seeds in, like we were talking about earlier, I like to scatter the organic granular down and just wait a couple of weeks for some rains and stuff to soften it up, let the microbes start breaking it down. But that's a good way just to kind of get started. Compost, organic granular. If you really want to, you could put both down. You're not going to hurt your garden that way. But that just gets the surface ready.
I definitely do that for my container. Perhaps when we get to that, we'll talk more about it. But a couple other tips is when you go to purchase your once you've purchased your granular, don't throw the whole bag down.
Right. Okay?
It's like a handful. Or if we're looking at a square foot of space, a couple tablespoons at most.
At most, right.
It's a light sprinkle. It is not taking that whole bag like you're, dumping the whole thing into the soil. That would be way too much. So don't do that.
Yeah. And it can be confusing. Like when you read the back, it's like, you know, X amount either in cups per square foot or per 100 square feet. And if you grab a handful, our hands are different sizes, but grab a handful and really just scatter it. It just should be a scattering, several inches between the particles. You're getting the nutrients in there. And we'll talk a little bit about it too. Here is prepping the planting hole, which is another way to save resources. Like if you're putting in your tomato transplant, you dig a hole, put in a tablespoon of the organic granular, a couple handfuls of compost, mix it through, and then you put in your transplant. So you don't have to, and that's part of what I want to come from my channel and from the podcast, is that you don't have to spend a ton of money and go for perfection. The plants just need a little bit. On that same breath, for people that don't know, compost itself is well below a 1:1:1 N, P, and K. So it's just low amounts, slow and steady. Your plants take what they need and they'll grow and do perfectly fine.
And if you don't know where to find compost, oftentimes you can, your local municipality has a composting program of some sort, and you can often get it super cheap, like a gallon of it for a couple dollars. So check into that too, because that could be a good source to find some.
Well, I agree. And that's a good tip. Now, I'm just going to add a correction, because a gallon's not a lot. It's usually like a cubic foot, which is a lot more than a gallon, but it is really, really inexpensive. And if you have your own truck, sometimes you can bring that. They can fill it up. You can get it in all kinds of different ways. And the beauty about buying it that way from your, you know, local municipality is they actually make sure that it's composted down 100%, which means it's fully broken down. When you use it, it's not going to challenge your plants for nitrogen. It is just really good stuff. And most counties have it somewhere if you can find it. It makes a big, big difference. So a general prep, you know, for the earth beds, I'm really just clearing them out, putting down some compost, some organic granular. As you were saying, if you've got leaves, maybe they're not fully broken down, put them back over the surface, because what's going to happen is worms are going to come up. Worms are coming out now because it's warming up into the 50s at times. They're going to, you know, eat the leaves a little bit. They're going to leave behind castings. So you can start getting your beds prepped too by just covering them up with some light mulch, leaf mulch, or whatever you have. It doesn't have to be pretty. It's not a beauty contest. Doesn't have to be fancy. Just get that organic matter, maybe some of that organic granular to the plant. You've said before that organic granular fertilizer is more like a vitamin versus compost. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, when I go to prep my beds, I put down some fresh compost and I add in a little bit of granular, because I see it as like compost is that slow release over time through the season that's going to feed, and that organic granular is like a little boost, or like a little probiotic, if you will, just to kind of help comprehensively well round the nutrients that are going into the soil. I could totally just be like in my mind, but I do a lot of my gardening through my intuition and how I just feel things should be happening, or how I should be doing things, and that just feels right to me.
I would agree with you. And a vitamin is sort of like, you know, nowadays you see like the gummy with beet juice or something in there, or you see the capsule of dried vegetables in there. It's usually kind of the essence stuff that the body needs, but you're not getting, you know, all the bulk of actually eating the beets or eating the carrot. Same thing with the garden. As you throw out down the organic granular, it is organic. The microbes break it down. Your plants get the nutrients, but they're not getting all the organic matter that is really needed for the soil life and the microbes and the worms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like extracting the best stuff gives your plants that boost, like you're saying. But when it's gone, that organic granular didn't really add to the conditioning of your soil. And that's why the compost is so important.
Yeah.
Or the organic matter being put down, you know, really as often as you can.
You were talking about the worms, and I like to paint the picture of, like, if you go into the forest right now, you're going to see leaves all on the ground because they fell from the branches above. Nature already composts through the season, and we're just following that same concept. The leaves fall, the worms come up, they eat it down. You see it. The floor, it just composts itself. You never see a forest floor that's 15 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
It happens on its own.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Slow and steady, and it's beautiful stuff. Now, I like to have, you know, a section where I call FYI for your information and garden tips. Now's a great time. February here in Maryland and some other places, it'll be March. But as soon as it starts getting warm like this, and part of what I'm recommending on cleaning up is like any kind of debris, like boards where snails and slugs can hide, containers, you know, clean those up, throw away your plant debris that's laying around, kind of open up the space. But now's a great time to use snail and slug baits. And you can get organic slug baits. They either have iron phosphate in them or sulfur in them. Scatter them broadly. Don't pile them up, but just follow the instructions. Scatter them broadly across your garden, you know, any cracks and crevices that you see. The snails and slugs will eat that now because they're coming out looking for food. You will greatly reduce the population. And then when your seedlings are coming up or your transplants are going in, you're going to have a whole lot less damage. Like probably, I mean, the biggest tip for the first thing that I do like late winter, early spring is, aside from cleaning up, is getting that snail and slug bait down.
It's really effective. Great advice. It works very well. Most of our spring crops, the slugs love. And if anyone has berries out in that world, oh goodness, and your berries are in the ground, oh, peace be with us, because those slugs are going to come up and eat. So make sure you get that product down. And also to feed your berries, this is a great time to throw some compost or some granular down. They're going to be waking up soon, and being able to take advantage of those nutrients right away will really make a difference in your berry production.
And then berries for you, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries.
Oh, I love them all.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good time. And then same thing on that note, we're not going to really talk too much about water soluble fertilizer today. If organic granular is like a vitamin, the water soluble fertilizer is like a super vitamin.
Like Gatorade.
It gives everything a boost right away. But a lot of people are going to see their garlic coming up now. And just as a side, it may look a little bit beat up, but it's starting to come through nice and strong. Now's a great time to give it a shot of water-soluble fertilizer. Just a quick pour. And that's all I really do for my garlic, because you prep the beds the year before. You got stuff in there. Quick drink of a water-soluble, which means the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium are immediately available to the plant. So it's going to suck those vitamins in or those elements in, and it's going to take off. And you can just kind of let your garlic go from there.
It's the best.
Now, we also, yeah, I mean, and I was actually out, you know, practicing what we're talking about today. And I seriously think I probably did, I don't know, 100 to 200 cloves of hardneck garlic. I think they all came up. I mean, there's no gaps. It's like these perfect little pattern. It's really kind of exciting. And again, this is kind of how like I get my winter blues shaken off, is just wandering around and saying, man, that garlic looks great, and nobody's around but me. But
you just go visit fun. The garlic. Hi guys.
See how it's going. All right, so let's get to the listener questions. And we covered it a little bit, but I'm going to give this one to you because you always have good advice when people ask, what should I plant? So the question here is, what should I plant in the spring?
The answer will always be what you eat, what you buy at the grocery store that grows in the spring. That's, for me, going to be, of course, the bunching onions, lots of leafy greens. I grow kales and collards, mustards. Those overwinter very well, so I will be eating off of those in like another 3 weeks when it gets a little bit warmer. They're really going to start to pick up and produce again before they go to seed. So I get that early green food because I planned ahead a little bit. If not, if you're putting your transplants in now, you'll see them in about 45 to 50 days, all good. You want to have fresh greens on your plate all the time, so grow them. We spend so much in the grocery store for them. Spinaches, kale, all your lettuces, radishes, mm-hmm. Carrots will go down. I won't see them for probably like 2.5 months, but it's good to get them when the soil's nice and rich and wet, because they really need to be moist in order to germinate.
And you came up with, actually made me think of something. One, we missed Swiss chard. That's a plant you can seed now or grow as a transplant. That's a great leafy green. And now that I started talking, I forgot what I was going to say, so I'm just going to ramble on for a second. Okay, you said that you're going to be able to get some of your leafy greens because they overwintered. Mm-hmm. And that's, I wanted to go back to that because that's part of prep too. Like if I go out there now, I have kale that survived. Some of it I was protecting. Collards that made it. I actually have broccoli that survived, but the crowns froze and they're brown. I'm going to cut that back. You don't have to pull out last year's mm-hmm. kale, collards, even broccoli if it made it, because like you're saying, it's going to grow leaves, but they're going to produce all these blooms and flowers that are edible because they're biennials. So part of your prep for February is kind of trimming back some of the plants that survived, remove what looks dead, but leave the plant in there because related to the brassicas, And that, again, would be broccoli, your cauliflower, kales, cabbage, etc. It's going to grow. It's going to take off with the temperature change, and you will get delicious buds and flowers that you can eat. And then, you know, you've got your transplants coming. You're going to put in a new crop and remove them later. But keep them in the ground because you can eat them.
Yeah, highly recommend. Take that experience. Let them watch what happens. Watch the bolting and how the stem starts to stretch and get taller and taller and taller. And then the flower buds come and they open and they're yellow. And you're like, oh, these are so beautiful. And then the pollinators are coming around because they see this beautiful bright color. You can eat that stem. You want to be fancy on your plate, beautiful garnish, or saute them with garlic and butter and toss them with your potatoes or your pasta or your rice. They're so good. It's going to blow your mind.
And it's not like it's 10 buds or 20 buds or 50 buds. It's hundreds.
It's a lot.
It's literally hundreds coming off of a single kale plant. And you can, you know, just make a beautiful salad out of that. Next question is, if my container plants had a disease, do I throw away the soil? And I get this question all the time. I also get the question, if there isn't any disease and I use my container soil once, do I throw it away? The answer in both cases is no. It's too darn expensive. And when you have diseases show up in your garden, you have to kind of approach it this way, that you didn't have a garden. You planted something, a disease showed up. So my point is that they're just going to show up. They're in the air.
Yeah.
They vary zone to zone and garden to garden. Same thing with insects. So if your tomato plant, for instance, you're growing it in a 20-gallon container, it gets some sort of early blight or leaf spot. It's not because of the soil. It's just because those disease spores, what have you, are floating around, and they're going to find your plant again. Mm. So keep your soil. We'll talk a little bit about prepping container soil the second part of the podcast. Keep your soil. Throw away the plant. You know, I even compost it because composting ends up killing the diseases anyway. But if you're not sure, you've read other things, just throw that plant away. But the disease is going to show up. So what you want to do is try and think back to when it showed up on your plant leaves. And this year, certainly take notes when diseases show up and when pests show up. You just want to get to a preventative spraying. So you want to, for instance, if you notice the diseases showed up on your container plants, say July 15th, July 1st, you want to start spraying an antifungal. And you just set up a routine. And if you want to follow me on YouTube under The Rusted Garden, I talk about this. I have all kinds of sprays. And you just do a light spraying, you know, every 2 weeks. That keeps the diseases from getting out of control, and you still get great production.
Yeah, really great advice. It's just around. It's everywhere. You can't get away from it. It does not mean you're a bad gardener or that you failed. It's just we have to live with them and adapt to them. There's varieties that you can find that may have a resistance to certain diseases or viruses. Look into your local county's extension office. There will be information around your specific region or area and, you know, what's going on, what pests and diseases are in your area and how to care for them. It's a great resource.
Yeah, I mean, it really, and I want to just stress too, it is not your fault. You're going to see stuff like, I never get a disease in my garden. I never get a fungus. I never have insect problems. And
it's lies.
It's a lie. And if it is true, let's just give them a break that they're not lying. It's because they have the one garden in one place where the diseases and the insects are not. They show up. These have been around for millions of years. They're going to find your plants. Your goal is just to reduce the damage. Don't be down on yourself. If something happened, don't blame yourself. So maybe this is why I was already talking about garlic, because I've read through these last night. Third question, my garlic is up, it looks beat up, what do I do? Nothing. That's what garlic does. It grows, it loves the cold. So from, you know, if you planted it back in the fall, you just want the root system to establish really well. December, January, February, it starts sending up the greenery. Then it freezes, the greenery turns yellow, may brown, may die back. All you do right now is let it be and give it that drink of water-soluble fertilizer. That's what I recommend. Quick pour. Soon as the temperatures change even better, condition-wise, meaning the frost is going away, your garlic is just going to go crazy and sit back and wait. And on a side note, too, you can harvest some of the greenery of the garlic. You know, a couple of the leaves, chop it up, put it in scrambled eggs, do whatever you want with it. Really, it's delicious. I put it in salad dressings. But there's so much that we can actually start pulling out of a garden that overwintered, as we were talking about, maybe just kind of sprouting and getting going. But there's always something out there. And even if it's a little whatever, mm-hmm. toppings for your salad, at least you can be like, hey, you know, I grew this and feel good about it.
Yeah. And your herbs will be giving to you very early. I mean, my thyme, I have some creeping thyme variety, but it is doing just fine and ready for me to start harvesting from. I see my flat leaf parsley starting to awaken. So your herbs will always be there for you.
And down the line too, as we get more and more produce coming out of the garden, you and I will be talking a lot more in depth about cooking and recipes and ways to use everything.
Yes. Right now we're still, you know, we're in that, I call it famine, but, you know, lots of soups, lots of potatoes and sweet potatoes, lots of onions, lots of beans, and then my greens because, you know, I can pull from some. But that's pretty much the diet right now as we try to, again, eat through the seasons, eat with them more locally. So it's nice.
Yeah. Well, we'll be growing all of it. So, it you know, every year. And I just don't get tired of it. It's always new. Like, even though I've been doing this for 30-some years, every garden is brand new.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. So social media-wise, I'll give you a second to collect your social media. But you can find me on Instagram under The Rusted Garden. And that's R-U-S-T-E-D. Some people think I'm saying rustic, but it's The Rusted Garden under Instagram. The Rusted Garden on YouTube. I also have a second YouTube channel called My First Vegetable Garden. And that's the videos there, just a little bit longer, more detailed, really geared to that first-time gardener versus The Rusted Garden. Sometimes I just try and get the information out real quick so you can get back into your garden. I also have a seed and garden shop called The Rusted Garden. And I think maybe you got the theme there. It's The Rusted Garden anything. But therustedgarden.com, you can find seeds, neem oil, peppermint oil, seed starting trays, anything you really need. And I will be linking all of our social media in the podcast description.
And you can find me on Instagram at Adesia Girl. That's E-D-E-S-I-A-G-U-R-L. And looking forward to sharing lots of cool tips and tricks on once we have harvested all that wonderful bounty from our gardens. What do we do with it? It'll be fun.
So I was talking a little bit about, and I think you agree with me, like winter can be a challenge for many of us. Not necessarily a depression. Now, for people that don't know, I spent, you know, a good 25 years as a mental health therapist. So I'm not really talking about, you know, a depression, but it is kind of a sadness or a blues that really come, I think, with the winter and the cold weather. So now is a great time to kind of get out in the garden, start try and start imagining what you are going to create. I kind of look at it as not so much a blank slate, but a place where I can, you know, sculpt using nature, do some light cleanup, get the weeding done. Don't overwhelm yourself. Give yourself credit for your successes. But really just kind of start thinking about what you want your garden to become. Feel the warmth of the sun on your face. Start thinking more about spring and kind of let that spring fever take hold and really get you going.
I think that's really beautiful. And to add, like, as you're out there, I encourage you to just listen. And I know it might sound a little woo-woo, but it really is it's a great opportunity for you to sort of ground in and hear nature. There's so much music going on with the birds and the wind and the way the leaves tussle. There's so many experiences that your senses will fire when you spend time in nature. And that's why Gary and I spend a lot of time trying to encourage others to take time and do it. It could, even if you're just growing one plant, one basil plant, whatever, still follow those same principles. And I promise you, your life is going to expand in a way that you've never experienced. And when we talk about our health and our wellness, that's where it comes from. You just pour into yourself and the experiences that you have. And there's just something very healing about nature. So you just need to do it.
you just plunge all of your senses into the activity. And, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking the Cardinals just came back over the last 2 weeks.
Love them.
I can hear them out there now. And, you know, I can even, if you listen carefully enough, hear them cracking seeds and stuff like that. But it just really does. And I want to talk a little bit more about it because it is so important. You get lost in it. You stop thinking about things that worry you. You stop, you know, thinking about stuff that is negative. And it's just a peaceful break of enjoyment. And then it kind of refreshes you a little bit. And then you can go back to your, you know, your life. I don't want to say life of worries, but you can go back and maybe the worries are a little bit less impactful.
When we're at Freetown Farm, you know, we hear that every day as new people find out who we are and what we're doing and they come and experience it for themselves. They will say, oh my gosh, I came here. I was so stressed out or I was upset about something and I'm leaving. And of course they have some bounty of wonderfulness in their hands, but they've also gotten education because we've taught them something and they have had that opportunity to take that time for themselves that they didn't even realize that they were doing. And they leave feeling better and smiling.
So. Yeah. And it happens over and over again. It definitely, definitely works. Plant spray pest of the day. This is a segment I'll have in all the podcasts. I already kind of covered it. Slugs and snails. That is the pest of the day. Any kind of baited slug bait that has iron phosphate or sulfur really works well, and I really recommend getting that out now, and then in 30 days, put out some more. You don't have to do this every week, but you will greatly reduce the population of snails and slugs, and then you can just focus on your garden. So, second half of the time.
Oh, I have a question about it, because I've always wondered.
Yes.
So what exactly is the sulfur doing to the snail? Is a snail ingesting it, and then it stops eating, or is it... Remember, I know some of us did it when we were young, but you would put salt down and you'd let the slug like burn up. Oh, it was awful. But like, yes. What is happening to the poor snail?
You got it. The iron phosphate or the sulfur, it's in these little baits that are actually waterproof too. So they hang around, they eat it, it gets into their stomach, shuts down their digestive system, basically.
Okay.
It's probably a more technical term, but they stop feeding and then they just crawl to wherever they go and they just die off. So...
That's better.
It's a great time. Yeah, it's better. I mean, you got to decide how you want to. You don't have to kill the snails and slugs, but if they're doing damage in your garden, they're going to damage your garden. So it's up to you. But now's a great time because they are actually looking for stuff to eat and they'll find the baits and it'll greatly reduce, you know, the damage. And I really only have to do this. And then some people will care about the snails and slugs. I get it. I have to do this for really February, March, April, May, and June because of what I'm growing. And then after that, I don't put the baits down anymore because the rest of the plants are different plants. They're not really bothered or the damage is minimal. And then maybe I do it again in September if I'm doing a next wave of leafy greens. But it's the leafy greens that get wrecked in my area.
They sure do. They will take them all the way out. Big holes.
Yeah, quickly too. Second half of today's topic is soil prep for containers. We covered it a little bit, but I'm just going to start from the top here. Don't throw away the soil. You know, we discussed that with the listener's question. You never have to throw away anything soil related in your garden. It's really expensive. The most expensive way to fill containers is going and buying those bags at Home Depot, Walmart, wherever. I have plenty of videos on my channel, The Rusted Garden, if you want to see how you can make your own soil mix. You'll save yourself a lot of money. But let's just say you filled up your container last year with something from a bag, and now it's February. What do you do? Do you have to dump it out? No. I think we've covered that pretty clearly. Do not throw it away. If you do feel something's wrong with it, and you just feel like you don't want it, put it into your compost bin. Just throw it on there. And then you'll get it back in some capacity down the line. But generally speaking, you don't need to get rid of it at all. And what you want to do, and I kind of use this as a general rule of thumb, if my container soil is 1, 2, or 3 years old, I don't do a whole lot to it. I might dump it out or reach in with my hand, just break up the root ball a whole lot, fill it back up maybe halfway, or if it's a small container, a couple handfuls of organic granular, mix it through. I'm just kind of fluffing it up, throwing in some organic granular fertilizer. If I have it, a couple shovelfuls of compost, and I will just kind of mix it in right in the container. My bigger containers, sometimes I dump out so that I can refill them halfway, put some organic granular when the container is halfway filled, and then I fill the rest in something like that. There's 1,000 ways to do it. Just to be clear, you're breaking up the roots that are in there, you're throwing in some organic granular, maybe some compost, and you're just working it through. And that's really good for the second year. And you can do it again for the third year. When I get to the third year, we'll talk about that shortly, I dump all of my containers that are 3 years old or older into a big tarp, and I refresh it in a different way. Do you have any tricks or anything you do to your container mix?
It's really just, I try to think of it as, all right, this is a container. It is relying on me for all the things. It's not in the ground. It's not going to go forever to be able to find nutrients. So making sure that I've got to feed it. Compost, some worm castings, some granular fertilizer, boom, that's it. Mix up some ground up leaves in there. And I just do that at every kind of change over in plant. I'll amend with a little bit more compost, a little bit more worm castings. Now, Gary he may say that you spoil. I might spoil my containers, but I just feel like I started in containers and I went through the entire journey of like not being as successful because I wasn't thinking about, oh, I have to keep amending the soil. I was just thinking, all right, well, there's soil in the containers. There's good. No, you've got to add to it because the plant is taking up all of those nutrients to produce for you. And then when it's done, everything is depleted. So it makes sense. And
yeah, it's just a concept. And I'm not going to certainly say anything about the way you're prepping it because it works for you. And that's the beauty is there are hundreds of ways to do it. Like I don't really use worm castings that often anymore, but when I do, it's definitely in containers because there's not a lot of worms and it's kind of, you know, an artificial environment. So worm castings are a great addition if you want to add that in there. But once you find a method that's working for you and you feel like it's budget friendly and your plants are producing, stick with it. Even if you hear other ways to kind of change it up, I would just stick with what works. If that, you know, first year, second year container soil looks kind of heavy, maybe more sandy and earthen air, and it's just not porousy and fluffy. If you don't have compost, a couple handfuls of peat moss in there and just kind of fluffing it up. And that's what you want. You want a soil that has the nutrients thrown back into it. You want a soil that holds water, that's loose, and, you know, your plants are going to love you for it. Now, this is just for the prep. You know, once your plants are growing, because the plants suck the life out of the soil, you have to keep adding stuff in that over the years, or not over the years, but over the season, especially when the plants are larger. And we'll be talking about that in future podcasts. So generally speaking, I kind of broke it down because sometimes people like to dump stuff out anyway. But say, you know, your container mixes are 2 to 3 years old and you just want to dump them onto a tarp. I take about 3/4 the old material, that's the stuff coming out of your container, and then I add in about 1/4 worth of new material. And that could be just peat moss, just coco coir, just compost, combination of 2, combination of 3, it doesn't matter. That is the organic matter that you're bringing back into there. And then into that, when it's laying out, you know, I'll throw couple handfuls of the organic granular fertilizer down. And I hope people are understanding that it's not like an exact measure with the organic granular. You could take the stuff, take it off the tarp, fill up your container back up. If it's a container that's 20 gallons or less, well, let's say 10 gallons or less, you know, maybe just one big handful. Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, closer to 20 gallons or bigger, 2 or 3 handfuls of the organic granular. You can't really overdo it. You just don't have to add so much that you're kind of spending too much money. And that would be for containers that are like 2 or 3 years old, maybe a little bit less. It's just kind of a quick refresh. For the containers that are getting into the third year, fourth year, maybe let them go for 5 years. That's when I'm really adding a good third worth of new material. So it's like 2/3 of your old stuff and then 1/3 of that peat, coco coir, compost, however you want to mix it up. And then you end up with more container mix because you're adding so much. So now you have to go out and buy some more containers and you have to expand your garden.
You nailed it.
I mean, that's the recipe that I use, but you can do variations on it. But the key pieces are the addition of the organic matter when you can compost, the organic granular, and just loosening up. And I can't. And then you did mention worm castings, which I think are great to add into there.
Yeah.
You know, just follow the instructions and.
I mean, you I end try up to
with fine stuff.
Find more, like actual worms. Oftentimes, my compost is broken down enough that I can use it, but there's always worms in it, so I'll just grab it and hope that the worms stick around in the container to poop all day.
Yeah, I mean, the castings are really excellent because they do have a natural growth hormone in there. They have just all kinds of stuff that the plants have been using in their ecosystem, I guess, for thousands and millions of years. So it does help strengthen your plant. I want to just touch real quick again on the basic organic granular fertilizers, because this is a point, I don't know, it's kind of close to me when I go into a big box store and I see like stuff that says natural, organic, handcrafted, biotone, true biotics, all this kind of stuff on there. They aren't bad products. They work, but they're really trying to get you to pay a lot of money for something that you should be paying a little bit for. And it's nice for the convenience. We want to keep the companies in business, but really think about reading the ingredients and trying to stick around $2 or less per pound, and your plants will never know the difference. They can't tell the difference between a fertilizer that's $5 a pound or a fertilizer that's $1 a pound, because it's all they want is nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, other micronutrients and stuff like that. And you're going to get them even when you pay less per pound. Is that fair to say, do you think?
It's great advice. When you broke, I think you even had a video about it and you broke it down. I was like, oh my gosh, this trickery out here, you know? It's just marketing, and as the consumers, we want to be aware of how marketing works and you know, just strategies that companies use so that you can make your own real educated decision on how much you want to spend for a product at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that's the ultimate goal. Like, it doesn't matter to me if you decide you want to buy that fertilizer that is $5 a pound. Just know what the ingredients are and why you're buying it. And maybe you've used it before and it's just amazing results and you want to stick with it, but don't get fooled by the packaging. Foraging, edible landscaping, cooking from the garden. And if you have some cooking ideas you want to throw out, feel free to do that. For the foraging right now, dandelions are going to start coming up wild. And if you have the opportunity to take a dandelion from the lawn or from, you know, maybe your flower bed, and just dig it up, dig down deep so you get the whole root, plant it into your garden, nourish it with some water-soluble fertilizer, you're not going to recognize that dandelion, because usually it's out in the lawn. People are trying to kill it. They're just trying to just get rid of it. But if you give a dandelion the same care that you give your garden plants, you're going to have this, you know, these 12-inch leaves, 12-inch wide, amazing greens that are actually the first, they love the cold, the first to be ready in your garden, and you can be harvesting dandelion leaves. So look around for the first dandelions to come up and plant them in your garden. You're going to be impressed with how well they do and how great they taste actually when it's colder out.
They're so good for you. The nutrients are ridiculous. Like, and if they do have a bitter taste to them, but that's okay. We just bring it in and we can balance that bitterness with a little bit of acidity in the form of lemon juice or vinegar. And then you could also balance it with a little bit of sugar, which could be maybe a little agave syrup or honey, what have you. But trying those two together, it really does mellow out that bitterness, and it becomes, oh, I can add this to my salad with a nice, for a little zip to it. And it was just outside. Now, I wouldn't go picking it from like your park because likely those grasses are treated. You want to certainly pick from an area that you trust. And if you're not treating your lawn in any way, then, you know, perfect, because they'll be there popping up.
Yeah, and my lawn's untreated. So like, and you know, going into the maybe the fifth year or sixth year, I don't know, of not treating my lawn, and it looks fine. You know, it's green. I cut it. It looks good. Nobody complains. But there's so many different plants growing in there, and a lot of them are edible. And when the dandelions come up, I know I got so many deer, I don't want to really be eating the dandelions in my lawn. But I will harvest them, as I was saying, move them into a sheltered place the deer don't get to, and let them grow. And they're absolutely delicious. Mm. I really can't stress it. Very different, even in the bitter taste, when the season is cool. So that's February, March, April, beginning of May. It just has a different flavor to it.
And they're free. I mean, I think when we pay, if we see them in the market, you'll see them seasonally very quick in the early spring. You might be paying like $7 for a pound of them. It's they charge a lot.
Yeah. Harvest your own. Any other tips you want to talk about cooking, or should we save that for our next podcast?
We can save it, I guess. Other than just get ready. I mean, if you planted garlic, then make sure you have a garlic press on hand, because that will save your everlasting life. And chives, have them going. Have your scallions going. Those fresh early spring salads often lend to those oniony flavors, so you want to have them in your garden so you can use them.
They're just wonderful flavors. Onions, chives, garlic, all that is absolutely delicious. So let's go for a conclusion. I want to ask you a question. Kind of finish off with a thought on what spring brings to you.
Well, I bring in the spring. My birthday is in the spring. And
okay,
so
there you go.
It brings me, you know, that solar return of happiness and joy and having of the blessing of a new year. So that, and then the dandies. The dandies and the daffies.
And spring, I think, too, is like somebody once told me, you only get so many years to grow a garden, which, you know, when you're 25, you're like, oh, that's 50 years. You're good to go. As you get older, your time of growing kind of seems shorter. Let's just keep it that way. But spring to me is always a chance to kind of look back on what did you do? And you were talking about this earlier. How did last year go? What were your successes? What do you want to bring to your new spring garden? What do you want to try that's different? What do you want to keep that's been working for you? And it's just a good time to really start visualizing what you want your garden to become, you know, early summer, midsummer, where you want to be come the fall with your garden. And it's just a kind of great time to just kind of fantasize about how wonderful your garden's going to be.
It's a great time. And then make sure you don't do the things that didn't give you joy or were effective. Don't do them again. Right?
Yeah.
Try something new.
I mean, it's good advice, because on that same breath, as a new gardener, and even myself doing this for decades, you're going to run into problems. And the goal is not to have a problem. The goal is, how do you reduce the damage from the problem, so you still get a harvest. And then, you know, the following year, say, okay, this is what I learned. Let me try something different. And eventually you figure out how to avoid the problems, reduce damage, and then you just move on to something else. So it is truly a journey, I think, when you're gardening.
For sure.
And just don't be too hard on yourself. So the next topic, I like to kind of talk about what it is, but to be honest, I haven't picked one yet. Any ideas what you think our next topic should be?
Well, let's see. We'll be in March, so we could certainly be talking about the next round of crops that are, at this point, transplanting, because they, you know, we're starting our seeds now for doing it indoors. In another few weeks, we'll be ready to be transplanting, and we can talk about that, and maybe some more great springtime eats.
Okay. And I agree. So the cool weather crops will be in the garden in some shape or form, or going out into the garden, and then it's a great time to start getting the warm crops grown indoors. Get those transplants going. Check the podcast description for links to today's sponsor, which is The Rusted Garden. I don't have a sponsor yet. If you want to run an ad or talk about your product, please contact me at therustedgarden@gmail.com. And then also all the links for you, Erica, I'll put in there, my social media links, and people can just find what we've been talking about in the video description. And please check out my book, The Modern Homestead Garden. It's available at any outlet. I also have a second book that is now out called Growing an Edible Landscape, and you can find that book anywhere. Thanks for listening, and good luck in your gardens. It's okay. Remember to start small, learn as you grow, get digging, make mistakes, and most importantly, just enjoy your journey. Cheers, and thanks for listening.
Okay.